Wildflowers of the Asphalt, written by William Dean Howells, narrated by Frank Bailey. Looking through Mrs. Caroline A. Creevy's charming book on the flowers of field, hill, and swamp the other day, I was very forcibly reminded of the number of these pretty wilding growths which I have been finding all the season long among the streets of asphalt and the sidewalks of artificial stone in this city. And I'm quite sure that anyone who has been kept in New York, as I have been this year, beyond the natural time of going into the country, can have as real a pleasure in the sylvan invasion as mine, if he will but give himself up to a sense of it. Part 1. Of course it is altogether too late now to look for any of the early spring flowers, but I can recall the exquisite effect of the tender blue hepatica fringing the center rail of the grip cars, all up and down Broadway, and apparently springing from the hollow beneath, where the cable ran with such a brook-like gurgle that any damp living plant must find itself at home there. The water pimpernel may now be seen, by any sympathetic eye, blowing delicately along the track, in the breeze of the passing cabs, and elastically lifting itself from the rush of the cars. The reader can easily verify it by the picture in Mrs. Creevy's book. He knows it by its other name of brookweed, and he will have my delight, I am sure, in the cardinal flower which will be with us in August. It is a shy flower, loving the more sequestered nooks, and may be sought along the shady stretches of Third Avenue, where the elevated road overhead forms a shelter as of interlacing boughs. The arrowhead likes such swampy expanses as the converging surface roads form at Dead Man's Curve and the corners of 23rd Street. This is in flower now, and will be till September, and St. John's Wort, which some call the false goldenrod, is already here. You may find it in any moist, low ground, but the gutters of Wall Street, or even the banks of the Stock Exchange, are not too dry for it. The real goldenrod is not much in evidence with us, for it comes only when summer is on the wane. The other night, however, on the promenade of the Bannison Square roof garden, I was delighted to see it growing all over the oblong dome of the auditorium, in response to the cry of a homesick cricket which found itself in exile there at the base of a potted evergreen. This lowly insect had no sooner sounded its winter-boding note than the fond flower began sympathetically to wave and droop along those tarry slopes, as I have seen it on how many hillside pastures. But this may have been only a transitory response to the cricket, and I cannot promise the visitor to the roof garden that he will find goldenrod there every night. I believe there is always golden seal, but it is the kind that comes in bottles, and not in the gloom of deep, cool, moist woods, where Mrs. Creevy describes it as growing, along with other wildings of such sweet names or quaint as celandine, and dwarf larkspur, and squirrel corn, and Dutchman's breeches, and pearl wort, and wood sorrel, and bishop's cap, and wintergreen, and Indian pipe, and snowberry, and adder's tongue, and wake robin, and dragon root, and Adam and Eve, and 20 more, which must have got their names from some fairy of genius. I should say it was a female fairy of genius who called them so, and that she had her own sex among mortals in mind when she invented their nomenclature, and was thinking of little girls and slim, pretty maids and happy young wives. The author tells you how they all look, with a fine sense of their charm in her words, but one would know how they looked from their names. And when you call them over, they at once transplant themselves to the depths of the dells between our skyscrapers, and find a brief sojourn in the cavernous excavations whence other skyscrapers are to rise. Part 2. That night on the roof garden, when the cricket's cry flowered the dome with goldenrod, the tall stems of rye growing among the orchestra sloped all one way at times, just like the bows of violins, in the half-dollar gale that always blow over the city at that height. But as one turns the leaves of Mrs. Creevy's magic book, perhaps one ought to say turns its petals, the forest and the fields come and make themselves at home in the city everywhere. By virtue of it, I have been more in the country in a half hour than if I had lived all June there. When I lift my eyes,